Good morning. It is good to finally be with you all. And we're excited to be able to share with you kind of what's been happening this past year with Answer Macedonian Calls and our part in it. I will say at the beginning of this, we will. Some of this might be a little bit of review as was reported on some of this before, but it might be new to some of you. And also, we'll be using the word we a lot as we report about this. That includes all of us here as we are a part of this together. As Paul talks to the church in Philippi, this the things that he was doing is for their support was to their account, and likewise the same idea here. So if you see the we, you're included in it. This is a work obviously we're doing very much together, and we're excited to share with you what's been going on this past year. So as we get into just the different places we're going to go through, you know, chronologically where we've been. We did briefly report on this when we were here last time about the trip to Easter Island. So again, a work that we started in 2010 when we were in Paraguay. And so it's a work we're continuing to do on that far-flung island. They're famous for their statues, as most of you know. And the culture there is Polynesian culture mixed with the Chilean culture as well. When we go over, we stop and always visit with the congregation there in, or some of the congregations there in Santiago, or as we're getting them involved in the work. They asked me to teach a class while I was there and get to know the brethren more that way. But one of the brethren, Raul, there beside me, went with me this last year to the island, and you'll see Uri, the young man on the other side, and his wife, Andrea. And you'll also see a lot of peace signs and thumbs up. That's just, they like doing that. I don't know why. That's just when a camera comes out, that's what they do. So you'll see that from time to time. But he's one of the, this couple's one of the main, they're the kind of the main backbone of the congregation there. And we always meet with them via, most of the time get to meet with them every Sunday via Zoom and continue to have contact and teach and work with them even while we're separate. And you'll see Peaky there, another member of the church. And while we're there, we just ask people if they want to study the Bible. And we set up times, and we do a lot of work around the dinner table. And that's just, you know, if you study the Bible with people, there's a lot of battles that take place over souls around the dinner table. And so we do a lot of that while we're there. And so we're there with this couple. And also with this lady, her name is, well, I don't know what her actual name is. She just goes by Chena. That's what everybody calls her. And so we asked if she wanted to study the Bible, and so we're going around to different people. Some of the contacts we know, we've been there enough that we have maintained relationships with various people, but this was a new contact studying with her. And again, this is us worshiping together. This is the church on Easter Island, and as we meet together to worship and study together. So that was Easter Island, and we also went to Matanzas, Cuba. And by the way, sorry, pause on the presentation. I meant to say earlier as well, we will have time for questions, things of that nature at the end. So if you have any questions, please keep those, maybe write them down. But I want to answer your questions and keep you guys informed as much as possible. But Matanzas, Cuba was relatively new. I've been there a couple of times, and it's not one that we're going to keep going back to. This was something that, as we transitioned into answering Macedonian calls and being on the road, something we had scheduled on the books for last year. And we went with Brother Cash and Gary Dull there behind me. Unfortunately, they were going to be there the full time with me, but Brother Dull had some medical issues. He had to go back. I was there as their translator, so... When he went back, it was unfortunate, but it was a little bit easier on me. I didn't have to do as much translating, so it was good. But this is Matanzas, Cuba. Going into Cuba is interesting in that you can't just go with a regular tourist visa and do what you want to do. You have to get a religious visa in order to go and actually preach and teach. If you try and preach and teach on a tourist visa and they find out, you will be asked to leave, and the church in that area could be in trouble by the government. So you have to be careful. As long as you play by the rules, everything's good and chill. And so that's kind of what the nature of it. But one of the things that Gary does when he goes is helps out on the farm they have. The church has a farm in order to help the members of the church and then to also be a blessing to other people and they provide food and things to that. It's hard over there, very, very difficult, and so they do this. This year, while we were there, they're harvesting tomatoes, and they make those into a puree, cook them down, and then that's something that can be added to a lot of different foods and things, so that was what was happening then. They also have a bus that was given to them by the government. So just backing up a little bit, the church in Matanzas, they operate under the constraints of the government, and as long as they're doing that, they have been fine. And they built good rapport with the government there, so much so the government sees what they're doing and actually gave them more land to farm next to where they were, and also gave them this bus. Now, it wasn't as shiny as it is now. They've painted it and that kind of stuff. And while we were there, we brought down fuses because they couldn't get the fuses they need there. They were just using, you know, copper wire, you know, as a fuse. That's not always great. So we're kind of helping with that. Brother Cash was wiring it up for them. But a lot of the guys that are there are preachers, mechanics, farmers. They do it. They wear a lot of hats in Chile or in Cuba. So after that, the guys went home, and I went out to Colón. And Colón is kind of a dusty town outside Matanzas. Matanzas is a popular area, but Colón is kind of off the beaten path for most people. And this is the building where they worship, the house they worship in. In Cuba, you can't have a church building with a steeple and all that kind of stuff unless you had a building prior to the revolution and were able to get it back after the revolution. Anything now, any new church plants have to be a house church. You can't put signage up, and the most you can do is put a sign just inside the door on Sundays when you're there. That's about all you can do. But this is a couple that's working there, Orlando and his wife, Oslida. And Orlando preaches and goes to five different places on Sunday. So they kind of have a circuit riding concept for the churches because not everybody can afford to travel into town and be there. Although there are members of the church that walk for miles to come to church and worship with the saints. People who are well into age are walking miles to come and gather together. And so in some ways, they kind of put us to shame in that way. So it's encouraging to see their dedication to that. And so with Orlando, when I was there, we traveled around to the different groups and worshiped with them, taught class. So it was really encouraging to see all these different peoples and the communities around Colón. They do try and get together every once in a while, but it's not very often. This is another group we were worshiping with. This is back inside that house. What you can't see is just off to one side is another door, and there's another room full of people. And so you're standing here at the trying to preach, and you got a room here, and you got a room here, and so it's just the nature of things there. But really, really encouraging to worship with them. So another group we were with that Sunday. This is one of the farthest groups we go visit. But again, just meeting in people's homes there. So we had a Bible study with a family, and then another Bible study. This is the first contact with this family, and we actually had some baptisms from this Bible study. So people are receptive to the word. And what you'll notice also, there's not as many young adult age people. A lot of those people are leaving the island, trying to come here. So you have children, and you have many that are older that are not going to make that trip. So that's just how the church is kind of shaken out right now. Here are the baptisms, or a couple of the baptisms. That's their baptistry. There's that round kind of tank, and, you know, that's about knee-deep. It took several days to get that filled up because water pressure wasn't really shiny. But we did have the Bible study afterwards. Prior to that, we had another baptism, and the tank wasn't full, so we had to go out to the reservoir and walk pretty far out. So it was it's about up to my ankles in mud getting out there, but we did it, so that's what's important. So people are receptive to the word, and people are wanting to know more about it, And it's encouraging, again, to see their dedication despite the odds, despite everything, the challenges they have there in Cuba. Asuncion, we've had a long connection with Asuncion. We've been there. We lived there from 09 to 14. And so we went back again this past year. And there's been a lot happening there. The first thing that happened when we got there is they had organized a big, all the congregations came together. There's three congregations of the Lord's Church in Asuncion. And they all came together on one of the members' farms and had a long day of worship and Bible study. And what's really neat is the guys that were there that were, you know, high school when we were there are now married, have their own families and stuff, and they're teaching and leading in worship and doing more. So it's really neat to see that progression. So obviously we're there, we're preaching and teaching, visiting members, encouraging them, and trying to, you know, call back those that might be kind of on the fringe and just getting people oriented again. They have a church, this one, the third congregation is a church plant. It's a recent church plant. There's a couple that's there from Ecuador that are working in this area, another part of Asuncion. And Asuncion isn't huge by, you know, South American city size. It's about, you know, 1.5 million, about Palm Beach County population. And but you have cities in South America that are over 20 million people. So it's small, and when you compare it to the other places, but more than enough room in the areas to keep establishing congregations, which is what the Sacramento Street congregation wants to do. They want, instead of everybody being in one place and being huge, once they get to where they're kind of full, they want to start another church plant. So this is the second one that they've been involved in down there. So it's been encouraging to work with them. This is the group there in the preacher and his wife there at the front. So that was kind of review, but after we get back from Asuncion, we got all geared up and traveled out to Salmon, Idaho, which is a little bit far from here. This is not the straightest line, but we had a few stops we needed to make along the way. We did go through Albuquerque, but we took a right turn in Albuquerque, so we made sure we didn't get lost. We got up there. This is Salmon, Idaho. It's in a valley, and there's about 3,100 people in the valley itself, or in the city itself, and about 5,000 in the valley. It's 3 hours from the nearest Walmart, just to give you an idea. It's pretty isolated. When we had the group come down, it was 3 hours up to Missoula to pick them up, and you're going over, you know, mountain passes over 7,000 feet on either side to get to those places. The people there, when they go shopping, they buy groceries for the month, and they'll go make a trip over the passes to do that. But not an ugly place to be. We got there in April, like I said, and we still got some snow while we were there, and there was still snow on the mountains when we left in June. So a little bit different from Cuba as far as weather's concerned. This is the Bryan Avenue Church of Christ. It's been there a while. This particular building was built in the 90s with some help from members of the church in Texas. And the preacher that was there has retired. And we got there. They still live there. But his wife, her cancer came back, and they had to go down to Boise. And we're basically in Boise the whole time that we were up there, so we didn't get to see them. But our work when we go to these places is different. Every place we go to is different. You can't really go into a place and say, we're going to do this, and you come in with all the answers. You kind of have to go in and see, what is the need here? How do you work in this community? And so we were preaching and working with the church, obviously, and then also volunteering in the community, trying to get to know people. When you come into a small community, it's hard to kind of break in with, because you ain't from around these parts, is the kind of the feeling mostly. Especially when you have Florida license plates, it's even more difficult. So it presents some challenges. So we were volunteering and trying to get to meet new people, and we did have a few Bible studies with people we met, and just getting the word out as well. What we do also is get to know the members of the congregation, encourage them. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where it's just kind of nice when somebody affirms that everything you're doing is great. You're doing good, just keep going. And so we spend a lot of time with the members, encouraging them. We had they have a congregational camp out that we went to, much like you guys are going to be having soon. And so we went with them on that, and just different and sundry things that they do. Jeff Miner there with the horse, he's kind of a local cowboy, and I got to go out with him a lot. He's also in the Cowboy Hall of Fame for his artwork and stuff. And anyway, kind of a Renaissance guy. So we got to get to know them and spend a lot of time with them, encouraging them as well. You might recognize some of these people. And I think Robert did a report on this, but I'll give you my version of it. And we had them come up. And this is something that we encourage congregations that are supporting the work to come and see what's happening. Come and be an encouragement. If we're out somewhere and you guys have a free week, a free weekend, and you want to come and just work with the church or just, you know, visit, that is always super encouraging, because they don't get to see Christians outside the valley very often. you know, in some of these places we go, they don't get to see Christians from other places, and so it's really, really encouraging. And what's been interesting is even when you go to these places, you find these connections that you have with each other. You know similar people, you know different congregations that are the same, and so that's kind of been interesting, finding those connections. So this motley crew came up, and we poured some concrete. So obviously snow's up there, and they have inclement weather. And for you who don't know snow very much, when you go to church on Sunday, your church-going shoes are not the best for snow, you know, if you don't know that or not. But so some of the older members needed this sidewalk in order to be able to get into the building easier, and so we helped them with that. We also were involved in handing out 1,200 flyers in the community and just hanging them on doors and handing them out to people. And this is just to get the word out, just to let them know that the congregation is active. We're here. We want to be involved. We want to help you where we can. So we're handing out information about the church. And so that was very positive. After this, they said, you know what? These are things that we should have been doing. And that's kind of what you do when you go into a place. You encourage them. You see it can be done. And afterwards, they're like, we should be doing more of this. And that was kind of the feel after the group left. It really encouraged them to really be more involved in doing something like this on a regular basis. But we also, the group, they wanted to spend time with the group, so we went to their homes and had meals with them, shared meals with them. They do an interesting thing. It's a smaller group, and people are traveling hours to come to services because the nearest congregation is 3 hours away. And so they're traveling for hours to get there. And so they have a potluck every Sunday. Every Sunday they have potluck. Some of you are like, wow, that's a lot of food. Wives are like, set the crock pot out, you know, every Sunday. And but it also creates, you know, a really close bond with everybody there. So here we are getting ready to pray for the potluck that day. There are a couple of guys in this room who Salmon has a hamburger joint that's world famous in Idaho. And they have a hamburger that is 1 pound, a 1 pound hamburger, but not a like stack of quarter pounders. No, it's a 1 pound patty, and then you have a local bakery that makes the buns for it and everything. And there are a couple jokers in here that wanted to do a double 1 pound hamburger, and they ate it. And then people were taking pictures and everything. They got so anyway, it was quite the to-do in Salmon, Idaho that day. So here we are. We left on a Sunday, so we pulled into the parking lot, preached, and then hit the road, making our way back down this way. But it's a lot of travel, and Kara's been, we've adjusted well to this life, and it's been going good. Ask for your continued prayers, because it's like Mad Max on the road some days, so we need all the prayers we can get. But we came down here to work with Central Florida. Again, that's something that's kind of a hangover as we transition out of that. And we'll be there this year as well. It'll be our last year at Central Florida Bible Camp. And just a shameless plug, we need people for Central Florida Bible Camp. We need your help with those who would like to volunteer. It's a work where you spend a lot of time with the kids, but you don't realize how much of an impact, because you're there just trying to get them to make sure they dress right and are where they're supposed to be, and you're focused on those kind of things. But we actually did have a couple of baptisms from this week. But here's our travel down, and getting all our camp merch on, and that's the Robert there with the kids leading singing, and we had about 120 kids and a couple of baptisms. So it is something that you can make an impact on a child's life. It's very, very important. So from there, we go to Cherokee, North Carolina, and worked on the reservation there, or the Eastern Band of the Cherokee peoples, and just a lot shorter trip up that way. I will say I'd much rather prefer to haul a rig out west. The roads are very narrow up in the mountains there in North Carolina, but the church here has been there about since the 50s, I think is what they said. And they rent the property. They lease the property from the Cherokee peoples. They don't own it. And they've had help from other congregations to get it built, to maintain it, and that kind of stuff. So there's some other congregations in the area that are helping as well. And our job here was, again, to encourage and to get the word out the way we could. We were writing articles for the local newspaper and helping the members. There's a couple men that we were working with leadership, kind of helping them kind of step into some leadership roles. And so we're doing that. We also were working just cleaning things out. And ironically, we did more concrete work. I was not lead on this project. And so if you do concrete work and you're like, that's not, you know, I wasn't lead. But they needed this in there because we got a lot of rainwater up there. And again, it flooded the building. So we had to, this is one area they needed to kind of shore up some things. But the building itself needed cleaned out. And if you ever had a situation where you've, well, in this case, they get a lot of donations from people, and it's hard for them to say no. And sometimes you need somebody else from the outside coming in saying, no, we can get rid of this. So we hauled a lot of stuff off for them and helped them clean out the office and get things kind of organized. Also, they have a preacher's house there, parsonage house, and so we're kind of helping out with that also. I did find still in the wrapper a Windows 95 operating system, which was almost like, you know, something for the museum, but they're like, do we need this? It's like, no, I think we can get rid of this. I think we're good. So that's some of the work that we were doing while we were there, as well as teaching, obviously, and preaching and filling in. They do have guys coming from time to time, and we were kind of filling in where they had gaps. When you go into these places, especially with a place like this, you kind of got to dive into the culture and get to know those kind of things because you're operating inside that parameter. So their culture becomes the way they view everything. And so if you need to know about the culture in order to speak to them about certain things. And one of the things, they had like Cherokee Days, which was a week-long kind of celebration. And they have what they call stickball. And so they have five teams there in Cherokee, and then they have some teams come from Oklahoma, from the western band of the Cherokee peoples. And they come and compete in stickball. One of the men in the congregation actually is on one of the teams, the Hummingbirds. And they are not dainty. Stickball, how many of you have seen Dances with Wolves where they play stickball? That is a cleaned up version of stickball. Stickball is like lacrosse with MMA and that kind of stuff. It is intense. What you can't see is this: there's an ambulance there parked because guys were breaking things. They would come off the field, you know, relocating fingers and that kind of stuff. So it gets pretty intense. But it was neat to see that. We also were encouraging the... A couple of youth were in the band, the marching band, and so we'd go to the football games when they had home games and cheer on the Swain County Devils, which was ironic given while we were there to cheer on the Devils, but we were there for the band. So anyway, it was good. You might have heard about what happened in North Carolina. Unless you're living under a rock, you kind of know about the storms that went up there and all the rain. And we were hearing about it coming our way, and of course, being down here in Florida, having gone through several of them, we were like, pshaw, you know, it's not going to be, it can't be that big a deal, right? Famous last words. So we were over there, and the rain was coming, and I was just kind of chilling outside the RV, and this golf cart pulls up, and kind of looks at me weird and said, I guess you didn't get the information. And I said, I guess not. What's going on? He said, well, right now it's voluntary evacuation because where we were camping was on this like 40-acre island with creeks around it and with one bridge off and on. And they said in a couple hours it's going to be mandatory to leave. The tribal elders are going to ask you to leave, and they will come in with police force and make sure everybody's out of here. And I was like, oh, okay. So Colt, our dog, and I evacuated for one night to a hotel room. Kara was actually out of the country working at a conference, and she was supposed to fly in the next day to Asheville, and that didn't happen. So I said, well, maybe you can fly to Knoxville. But then we realized, oh, the roads are all closed down. Now, that's not going to happen. I can't come get you. So she went to Nashville with her family, and the kids had a fall break and were able to bring her in a week later. And when roads cleared up, and they're able to get in there. But the Cherokee area, some areas did flood. The downtown park flooded, but there's no real damage. This was a, you know, before and after kind of picture of the flood there for us, and we didn't see any damage there in the park either. So Cherokee became kind of a staging point for a lot of the getting help up into the mountains. Even when we left, they were still flying telephone poles and stuff out by helicopters out into the mountains and getting those kind of things. So still a lot happening, and there'll continue to be a lot happening. The church in Asheville became a kind of a hub for the Church of the Christ Disaster Relief. You know, we've been a hub for that in the past as well. And so there's a lot happening up in that area. And so obviously continuing to pray for those that are recovering from all of that. So that was kind of what affected us up there. So we left after that and have been reporting to congregations and going around and sharing, doing kind of what we're doing today to a lot of the supporters in Kentucky and Texas and Arkansas and Alabama. And so we've been doing a lot of jumping around. But for this year, looking forward, we kind of have things planned out, at least right now on calendar, out till spring of 26. But for this year, we'll be leaving next Thursday morning to go to Asuncion for 8 weeks, for about 2 months. So we'll be there till mid-March. Basically, we're doing what we do in the States, but there. And so focusing on that area. When we go to Asuncion, we don't have to, you know, get any special permissions. We know their brand of Spanish pretty well. And it's easy for us to get in, jump in, and work. We will go from Asuncion, travel over to Easter Island also while we're there, so we'll continue that as well. So that'll be on the docket for next year. Then we'll go up to Glendive, Montana. Where's Glendive, Montana, you ask? Well, that is eastern Montana over by the Dakotas, the flatter part of Montana, not the one you see all the pictures about, but we'll be out there working with the congregation, about 15 members. We'll come back down to Central Florida Bible Camp, just hop on down here. And be here for camp. And then we'll go over to Littleton, New Hampshire. There's a church plant in Littleton, New Hampshire that was started by one of the professors that was at the Bear Valley School of Preaching, who they had to leave that area because his wife was on oxygen, and being on oxygen at over 5,000 feet is a challenge. And so they needed to move, and so they started this congregation in Littleton, and it's going well, so we'll be joining them in the fall, Lord willing. And then we'll be here with you all. If everything goes according to plan, which we know how plans can be, but we'll be here with you and get to stay a little bit longer and get to spend more time with you all. So that's the schedule for next year. Any questions, comments, anything? Yes, ma'am.
I think it was Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
You said that they have, like,
well, that's a very good question. So the question is, how do they get... how is the government helping the church, and how do they make that connection there in order for them to do that? So the church plays by the rules, because you do have groups that are down there that try and do things that are against the rules. They get put in prison, and then they write letters to the church, oh, we've been put in prison for, you know, doing the Lord's work, and then they start sending a bunch of money. So you have that kind of thing happening, but the church hasn't done that. The church also has created relationships with the different officials in the area. So we bring stuff down, and we don't know why we're bringing the random stuff down, but we bring random stuff down, and some of that stuff goes to different officials. Like, there's one lady, her son, I don't know the medical condition, but he needed, like, calcium pills on a daily basis, and so we're bringing big bottles of calcium pills down, and she was instrumental in helping the church get the bus. And so they're doing good and trying to help people, and then they're being blessed because of it. The government saw what they were doing with the land and how they were trying to help people. And so the government opened up the children's homes to them to visit. No other church, no other religious group in the Matanzas area is allowed to go to the children's home, just the Lord's church. And so we were there on one occasion helping deliver food to the children's home, took it into their pantry area, and there was no other food in the pantry other than what we had brought them. So the church is doing great. And there's a lot of congregations in Cuba, and the church is doing really well. And so that's kind of how the government's seeing what the church is doing and allows them to work and do that. So it's been a blessing. So it's amazing when you start doing what the Lord asks you to do, doors start opening. And so that's been good. Very good question. Anything else?
Mine is about the visa.
Yes, ma'am.
I always thought a visa was a visa. Preaching visa.
Yes, ma'am.
Teaching visa.
Yes, ma'am.
Since so many people want to make money off everything, mm-hmm. they charge you different for that type of visa?
The different visas, as far as the religious visa and the tourist visa, it's about the same price. You just have a different process and different paperwork. So in Cuba, they have the government requires that they have a president of every religious body, and then that there are representatives in all the states in Cuba. And so we have to work through them to get the right paperwork, and they make sure it's all taken care of so that when we get there, all the government officials that are supposed to know that we're there know, and there's no question why these gringos are showing up. You know, they're not CIA spies or anything like that. It's everything's... Exactly, yes, ma'am. Why we're there, what we're doing, and that kind of stuff, and making sure that that's happening. And so that's a very good question. Yeah, so that's kind of the process of doing that. Any other questions? All right. You guys are, very well informed, I think, more than most, so I didn't expect there to be a ton of questions. But we do, like I said, try and keep you guys as informed as possible. We have a website. If you wanted to hop on our website, and if you aren't getting our bulletin, I think that is sent out through the congregation, but if you want to get it like right when it comes out, you could sign up on our website for our email that we send out monthly. You can go back and look at our past emails as well and how we've keeping everybody informed about what's happening. We do have things on Instagram and Facebook if you're into that kind of thing. And we post, tidbits here and there about what's going on throughout the month also. So it's a way of staying informed of what's going on, what's happening with the work on a regular basis. All right. So there's no more questions or anything. We'll have some time here for a short Bible study, I think. Yes, here we go. When we have our Wednesday night prayers and we have prayer requests, we learn a lot about each other, right? I think I've learned more about medical things through, prayer requests than any other thing. So we pray a lot. But that's not anything new. The church was doing it, obviously, early on. And Paul, in his letters, had several prayer requests. We're going to look at some of his prayer requests this morning. If we look over in Ephesians, let's turn with me over there. Or... open your app to Ephesians. Paul had a special relationship with this congregation there in Ephesus, and we saw that in the book of Acts as he went to visit the elders and tearfully bidding goodbye as he left. But in his letter, he writes to them, he says, "With all prayer and petition, pray at all times in the Spirit, and with this in view, be on the alert with all perseverance and petition for all the saints." So this idea of being alert in prayer, and we'll see it again later on, but pray on my behalf that utterance may be given to me in the opening of my mouth to make known with boldness the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains, that in proclaiming it I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. When we think about Paul, we would not assume that he would ever lack boldness. You feel like you kind of get to know Paul's personality when you read through his letters and you read through Acts and you see the things he was doing, people he was working with. You would think that this wouldn't be something that he never lacked boldness. But here to this church, he's asking specifically for boldness. And while he's in chains, we think about Paul and maybe he's always on, that way. But he had days, I imagine, like any of us, where you maybe lack boldness. And so in this way, he's praying for them to help him in his boldness. And that's something that, you know, you pray for somebody and you pray for this aspect of your life, but then you got to do it, right? So you don't, when you pray for a thing, you don't pray for it and then just sit down. You got to pray for it and work towards that thing. And so Paul, in his prayers and in his letters to the Ephesians, asked that they would help him to have boldness. What does it look like, do you think? We can see Paul and his example, but what would it look like for us to have boldness? This is a Bible class, you all can talk. What does it look like for us to have boldness if we were to have the same kind of prayer? What's that? Approaching people? When I was first learning how to preach at preaching school, the director of the preaching school, you know, some of us were a little timid initially. And, you know, we talked to him about that, and he said, they're not going to eat you. Which is to say, what are they going to do to you, right? What are they going to do to you when you're up there? So, you know, sometimes, you know, we have, as far as the situation's concerned, we don't have, you know, oppressive governments. We don't have, at least in religiously, and we don't have those kind of challenges that other places have. We should be able to be pretty bold, but sometimes we're timid because when you open up that box to talk to somebody about Christ, all of a sudden my relationship might change with them, and maybe we fear how that's going to change more than fear about where their soul is. And you start putting those things in perspective, we should be teaching. We should be talking to people about Christ. We have the best message ever and the best promises ever. We should be sharing that with people. And so boldness can be approaching people. Now, how we do that's important, right? How is it, what's the best way to approach somebody? With kindness. Kindness goes a long way. Even if they're not going to be kind, at least we're kind, right? So kindness. What are other ways that we approach people? Getting to know them. Yep. You see people. Are you people watchers, or is it just me? Y'all people watchers? Okay. It is fun. You see people, though, that look like they're just not having a great day. Have you seen those people? Or have you seen people like a mom in line with her kids, and she's struggling to keep them together? And you ever just say, hey, you're doing a great job. You know, just encourage and tell them that. And be that encouragement. So there's ways of doing it that are appropriate, but sometimes we need to have the same kind of prayer for boldness, to be able to speak the way you ought to speak. He prayed also and asked for prayers from the Romans as well. Romans chapter 15. He says, now I urge you, brethren, by our Lord Jesus Christ and by the love of the Spirit, to strive together with me in your prayers to God for me. Are we striving in prayer? Maybe we're habitual prayers, maybe we're stuck in the same, saying the same kind of things, but have we ever striven in prayer and strive in prayer and asking God? That's a neat word he uses here with this. To strive together with me in your prayers in several things, that I may be rescued from those who are disobedient in Judea. Were there some knuckleheads in Judea that were inhibiting the work of the church? Yes, there were. Are there still people like that who would go against what we're trying to do today? Yes, there are. That's always going to be the fact. When God tries to do good things, there's always going to be, you know, Team Satan that's going to do something against us. And so that's just normal. And so he asked for the prayers in that kind of situation as well. That my service for the Jerusalem may prove acceptable to the saints. I want to know, I want to be able to do what I'm doing in Jerusalem and make sure it's the right way, I'm doing it the right way, and it's acceptable to them. You know, you can go in and work with a group, and you can do right things, but do it the wrong way. Do you understand what I'm saying? You can go in and do right things, but do it the wrong way, and not turn out maybe the way. So he's asking to make sure that we're doing things the way we're supposed to, that is acceptable to the saints. And so I may come to you in joy, by the will of God, and find refreshing rest. When we look at Paul and what he's doing, there's obviously a need that he had to recharge himself. You know, you don't just go through all these things, you're getting stoned in places and shipwrecked and all those kind of adversities that are happening, and you just pop up like a jack-in-the-box and like, everything's fine, like, right? No, he had to have some time of refreshing. And so he's praying that when he comes to the church in Rome, that he'll find that time of refreshing. And we need to have that also. I don't know for you where your refreshing place is, but maybe you have a place connected with that. Maybe you get home and you kick off your shoes like, I made it. I made it home. I survived another day, right? And you can kind of refresh. And for us coming here, this is refreshing. This is refreshing. We're spending a lot of time with you guys. Hopefully, Lord willing, we'll spend more time with you all. But we come here and we fill up our bucket. Because if your bucket's not full, you have nothing to give anybody else. And that's what my grandfather taught me early on. He said, keep your bucket full, Josh, because you're giving that to other people, and you got to keep yourself full. Where's your bucket level right now? Are you filling up? Are you refreshing so you have something to give? Are you drawing from an empty well? So it's important. Paul's saying, I want to be refreshed. And he mentions in several places, we don't have time to get into it, but in 2 Timothy chapter 1, 16, and 1 Corinthians 16, 18, he mentions other people who were specifically refreshing to him. Onesimus oft refreshed him, he says. Came to him in his bonds, oft refreshed him. And so we can have not only places we go to find refreshing, and hopefully you come here, we worship here with the saints, to be refreshed, to build ourselves up, to have the boldness to go out into the world. I don't know if you ever think about this, but you go into the world, you kick your door open, and say, yeah, tell Satan I'm coming, the Lord's coming with me. And you have that kind of boldness because you've been refreshed. You're operating from a place where you're filled up with God, and you have something to give. And so Paul says, I need that. I need that. And we get to have that here. We, as a body of believers, get to be refreshed. Here, there should be a place where we come in and say, I made it. I made it to another service. So Paul prayed for that, to be refreshed by their company. And lastly, as we close, to the Colossians, that God will open to us a door for the Word. We have similar prayers. Hopefully you're praying for these kind of doors to be opened up in your opportunities to talk with people and to make it plain, make it clear how you ought to speak. Hopefully these are your prayers also. These are your prayer requests. And we pray and we ask for the same kind of prayers. Pray for us to have the boldness we need to have. Pray that we'll have doors opened up and we enjoy our refreshing time with you all. So as we close, we thank you very much for your time together. We thank you very much for your prayers and your concern for us. Many of you mentioned, you know, text us, call us throughout the year while we're out on the road, and those things are very important, and we appreciate that. Thank you very much for your time this morning.